Haskell Business Brunch.
So welcome to Business Brunch with me, Emma Harrison, Haskell Business Leadership Specialist, and...
And I'm Julia Handen, I'm Haskell's Funding Specialist.
And we are delighted to have a special guest with us today on Business Brunch, and particularly as it's Allergy Awareness Week, we have Helen Blythe from the Benedict Blythe Foundation joining us around this really important topic of allergy awareness. And we really wanted to share some insights today from Helen's perspective and how we can move forward and improve our systems and processes that we have within our schools and colleges for our listeners. So Helen got in touch with me and various other trade union colleagues and discussing how we can collaborate and do some further awareness of allergy management. So Helen, without further ado, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us about the Benedict Blythe Foundation, why it was set up and its purpose?
Yeah, I'm Helen Blythe and I'm the founder and director of Benedict Blythe Foundation. We set up the organisation a couple of years ago in memory of my son Benedict, who died after collapsing at school. He died from anaphylaxis, which is a severe allergic reaction, when he was 5 years old. And following his death, we started to get messages come through to us from teachers and school staff, and also from parents who all had a role in managing allergies in schools. And we were interested in the fact that there was a real mix in those messages. So some had had really positive experiences and wanted to kind of share with us how wonderful their schools have been. And there were real stories of kind of hope and positivity. But then alongside those, there's some really heartbreaking stories where things were repeatedly going wrong and children were put at risk. And we couldn't understand how there could be such a variance across the board. And that's where we started our work in understanding what was going on, what were the expectations on schools, what was happening, what was the guidance and support that they were given, and what could be done better.
Lovely. Thanks, Helen.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your very personal story with us.
I
think for me, we all need to understand more about this, don't we? So we will all probably know a child or some children that have allergies, whether it's through our professional life or in our personal life. But can you give us a sort of idea of the numbers that are involved? Do we know how many children have allergies?
So estimates sort of vary, but typically between one and two children in every average sized classroom will now have an allergy. So it's a significant number. And as you say, I think most people will know someone within their, you know, family group or friendship network who either has an allergy as an adult or as a child with allergies or intolerances. So it's ever more prevalent. And the number of severe allergic reactions is on the increase as well.
I think we know so much more about it now, don't we? And we hear lots more about it. But I think in terms of allergy management in schools and colleges, what does good allergy management look and feel like, Helen?
Yeah, it's a thing that we get asked a lot. And there's a lot of different components that make up good allergy management. We talk about them sort of in simple terms as being around three different areas. So the first being around communication, so really good, clear communication. And there's different documents and sort of information that can be passed out as a sort of baseline of what we'd expect most schools to have. So that would be things like having a really clear allergy policy. And there's a nice template of model allergy policy that can be used. There is also an individual healthcare plan that can be created for a child with allergies. And our recommendation is that that's created for every child with allergy. And we know from some of the research we've done that sometimes there are choices made about which children with allergy should have one. Our recommendation is that it's for all children with allergy. The second thing is education. So it's really important that teachers and school staff are supported to be able to manage a child's allergy in the classroom. And that means having good education around allergy management, understanding what allergies are, is just as important as emergency response and providing medication. It shouldn't just be about when things go wrong. It should be about preventing
a proactive approach rather than being reactive to it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. In an ideal world, we try and stop the allergic reaction happening rather than upskilling the adults in the classrooms to be able to respond when things do. And the last thing is the point around medication. So making sure that there is a spare auto-injector, you know, life-saving medication. And an auto-injector would be something like an EpiPen or a Jex pen. You might have heard of the brand name. Than the terminology, but having a spare pen in school, and schools have been able to buy these for around 6 years, but many schools are still not aware that they can do or how they go through that process. So having one available as a backup is really important as well.
I was really interested to hear about that when I was looking in more detail after our initial dialogue, Helen, in that schools can buy two pens from a pharmacy. Yeah. I think it's as straightforward as that, isn't it? And I didn't know that, so I'm sure many listeners to the call today may not know that too. And I think it's just publicising even little steps like that, isn't it, for people to be aware of in more detail.
We're really fortunate there's been a lot of work done by other organisations and charities in this area, but because it's been done by different organisations, it tends to be a bit hard to find or in different places. So there's a great website called Spare Pens in Schools that has template letters that people can download to take to their local pharmacy. It has information about their legal responsibilities and protections, about roles and responsibilities, about what they can and can't do. So I'd urge anyone who's got, you know, would like to find out more about spare pens to go to that website. We've also, as a sort of level on from some of these basics requirements and good practice, co-created with an organisation called the Allergy Team and ISBA, a school's allergy code, which is just some really clear guidance that pulls together all of the different examples of good practice from different organisations into one clear document. And it also includes a checklist that schools can use as well. So it means that you can go through it, and the majority of the things in there are low or no cost, and there's really practical suggestions in there. For example, having an annual anaphylaxis drill. So like you would have a fire drill, you would rehearse what happens in an incident where a child is experiencing a severe allergic reaction and an anaphylaxis, because, you know, seconds and minutes count in that scenario. So knowing who does what you do, so that it's well rehearsed, is really important. And there's some other recommendations like that in there.
Wonderful. There's lots of helpful, insightful information there, certainly for listeners to look through.
Yeah, certainly. So you talked about policy there, and obviously both Emma and I are members of a policy team, so it's our sort of day job, if you like. But I'm interested to know how your foundation is working with national policymakers to develop allergy management across the sector.
Mm. So we're working, we've met with and spoken with Department for Education about, you know, the findings from our research, but also the recommendations that we've made. We also work really closely with the National Allergy Strategy Group and feed in via them, and the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Allergies and All-Party Parliamentary Group for School Food. We also, because we started a campaign last year to protect pupils with allergies and to bring in a sort of bundle of measures that includes legislation and policy and funding, we've been working very closely with MPs to raise this and to kind of lobby for change at a national level. We recognise that there is a lot that schools can do themselves, but actually there is a real need for consistent central guidance and funding to make this possible. When we're talking about the spare pens, that it costs around £100 for a prescription, which is not a huge amount of money, but actually if you're having to make the choice about whether you can fund, you know, kind of Pritt sticks in your school, it's actually quite a difficult choice to make, particularly if you haven't got children who have experienced a severe allergic reaction in the past.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, one of the things about work policy at national level is that it takes time, doesn't it? And there are so many aspects to it. I mean, it's really good to hear that there are so many strands to this already, because I think sometimes in the sort of the policy world can become a little bit over focused if you're not too careful, and sort of disappear down a rabbit hole. And the breadth the greater the breadth of organisations that are involved in this, we're really going to be able to answer that question: how is this going to work for everyone? Which has got to be the sort of, you know, when you hit that, then we're really getting somewhere. I mean, I'm pleased to hear you talk about funding, because that is my policy area. The funding landscape is a very difficult one, but one thing we know is that school leaders are very good at making informed decisions. If they have the information, they can make the right decisions about these. And so again, back to the sort of raising awareness and understanding of what's what information is out there and what's available to them is really helpful. Thank you.
It was interesting when you mentioned earlier in the chat around communication, because as always, communication's king for everything, isn't it? But I know when I was reading through the literature that you have on the on Benedict Blythe's Foundation website, it was around that all stakeholder approach, wasn't it? Whether that's parent and carers, whether it's classmates, whether it's the whole school community, and that proactive planning of a reaction, isn't it? And how how we can do that. Do you want to share some insights around that, Helen?
It is so important to take a whole school approach to this, and the whole school environment isn't just, you know, kind of school leaders and teachers. It is the whole school staff, it is parents, it's everyone that plays a role in that community. And in terms of sort of a couple of areas, so we ran a teacher survey in the autumn of last year, and from that, kind of consistently, one of the areas that was raised was where schools are no-nut school, parents still sending in Nutella sandwiches for their children, and the sort of lack of awareness that parents had in the risks. And, you know, that was a real frustration for teachers who felt like they were doing so much already, but there were things that they didn't have control over. And also when we published our REACT report a few weeks ago, so this is a report that pulled together findings from the largest ever Freedom of Information requests. So we requested information from 20,000 English schools and analysed data from around 10% of those. And from that, we made some recommendations, and the recommendations that we made were focused around policymakers, and so what people in government and policy can do. It was also aimed at schools, so the actions that schools can take, but also there's a section for parents, so what can parents to do to get involved. And some of this is about being aware and being mindful and supporting that approach, but there are also things from a funding perspective that PTAs and parents can get involved in to make this a bit easier, to make school to allow schools to make some of those difficult choices about where they allocate some of the funding. So I think everyone has a part to play, and it's really important that we raise awareness across that entire group to make the school a safe place for children with allergies, and for the, you know, the adults have a role in keeping them safe as well.
Thanks, Helen. One of the things I was reading on the case studies was some absolutely lovely, wonderful examples of how teachers and staff have made a whole inclusive approach for all children with allergies in the classroom. And there's far too many to mention on this podcast today, but I just I know I asked in advance whether you wanted to share one of those or one that made your heart sing a little bit. Do you want to share that?
There are some really lovely examples. I'm actually going to share one from my kind of own experience rather than, if that's, my daughter is now 5 and she's got allergies. And she's got, you know, multiple allergies in schools. And there is always the worry where there's sort of events and kind of, you know, so at Christmas, you'll have Father Christmas come in, and the chance your child won't be given the same treat as someone else. And what I think is really lovely is where there's opportunities for every child to have the same. So for her, there was an incident where it was birthdays, and they made the choice to create this. It was a really cute kind of plastic birthday cake with light up candles, and so no children had their own cakes that were brought in. They had gone out and found it. I don't even know where they found it, but, you know, it was actually more exciting, I think, for most children than having a real cake. And so every child's birthday, they would bring this out, and there was no question about whether or not it was inclusive, because it absolutely was. Every child got to have this cake that came out, and it played happy birthday, and it had this light up candle. When you blew it or pressed a button, the candle went out, and That was really magical, because as parents we don't have to worry that your child is either being exposed to an allergen or that they're missing out on something that the other children have. And I think examples like that really make your heart sing. And it isn't about, you know, most of the things we've talked about so far have been about safety. But a lot of what parents experience, and it's the most heartbreaking for them, is around inclusion and inclusivity and making sure that your child is not the one that is sat apart from the others and not able to be involved in different activities. And I think that's something that, you know, schools have a lot on their priority list, and it's really hard to make a priority for some of those things, but it matters so much when schools do.
Sounds fabulous. We might need to have an Askell birthday cake, Julia, of that nature. Yeah, yeah.
If you find out where it's from, let me know. I'm
interested to you know, we're talking about stakeholders here, and what we tend to find is often that the children and young people in schools and colleges are much more responsive to change and reacting to one of their peers than sometimes the other stakeholders. Is that your experience?
I think there's a real difference in, you know, if I think about my parents' generation, they didn't know many people with allergies. You know, it's fairly rare. You know, my generation, there were more people with allergies. It was still relatively rare. You might know one, maybe two people that had that. Whereas, you know, I think about my children and the peers in their class, you know, there were often four or five children in the nursery classes that they were in who had allergies, and they were all just much more aware of it. And I think they all played a really active role in keeping one another safe and keeping an eye out for them. I remember my daughter, they brought in once a different brand of oat milk, and one of her friends sort of stood up and said, no, you can't have that. That's not safe. You know, it was kind of really adamant to the grown-ups in the room that this wasn't a safe milk, and it was just a different brand. It was absolutely fine. But, you know, just the fierce protection that they have for one another and the mindfulness. And I've worked with sort of young grads in my day job who have been about to open up a chocolate bar that's got nuts in, and they've asked the people around the table, has anyone got nut allergies, because I'm about to open up a chocolate bar. And so it's just much more part of how they live their lives and their sort of general awareness. And I think that's a great thing for the future. I think as we look to those people coming into the workplace, it feels like a much safer future for people with allergies. And they are, you know, far more aware than a lot of the adults are. And I think that can sometimes be difficult when you, as a teacher or someone who's got responsibility over children, has never had awareness of that. And then you've got a child with a history of really severe allergic reactions coming into your classroom. Knowing how to manage that is a really difficult, scary thing, because where do you go for that information? And the reliance is often to find that information out for yourselves.
Yeah, I was just reflecting when you were talking there, Helen. It's a bit like us adults who you say are the generation difference. When you go to a restaurant now, I don't know about you, but every time you sit down, somebody asks you, is there any allergies in your party? And I think that's a brilliant move forward as well, isn't it? And that more open awareness and dialogue and transparency about the issue. So I think hopefully we're moving quickly in the right direction and can continue that positive journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's great. And there's been a lot of work done by all the different allergy charities to raise awareness of that. And I think we're all really grateful for the difference that it's made. I think now it's about translating some of that awareness into action and sort of, you know, practical measures that can keep children safe. And I think as part of that, also make teachers and people who work in schools feel supported as well.
As we've been chatting, you've mentioned quite a few areas of that colleagues could look to for support. But as we're sort of coming to the end of our conversation, would you mind just summing up for us where school leaders can get support? Where are the sort of top four or five places that they should be going to look for information?
We've tried to make this really easy and put everything on our website. So within there is a tools and resources section. And what we've basically done is to, in one place, pull information from all of the other allergy organisations' websites so that it links through to different tools and guides. We also have some of the tools that I've mentioned that we've created ourselves. So the school's allergy code is available on there, free to download. They don't have to give us any data or details. It's just there. They can print it. They can use the checklist. And all of the research that I've mentioned is freely available on there as well. So the REACT report is a really interesting one for setting out what good looks like from a legislative and policy position at the moment, some of the recommendations around good practice, and then the information about the current state of how allergies are managed, and then recommendations for what they can pragmatically do as well. So I'd urge them to have a look at that information as well. But essentially, our website, which is www.benedictblythe.com, has all of that information available.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
And I would encourage people to sit and read through the fabulous case study booklet that you've got on that website too. There's some awesome stories there too.
Yeah, I think it really brings it to life. And I agree. If you've got some time and a cup of coffee, then sit down and have a read through those, because it helps you to really understand what it feels like for people with allergies and for the people who have to manage them.
And if people wanted to get in touch with you, Helen, is that the best way to do that via the website, or is there another operation to do that?
No, a really simple form on the website. They can get through to us really quickly on there. If you want to get in contact, that's the best way to do it.
Great. Well, as Julia said earlier, we really appreciate you sharing your personal story with us, and indeed all of the listeners, and hopefully really change that positive thinking moving forward with allergy management. Thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Askell Business Brunch.